Hi, I'm Suni Khalid, an editor in the KALW newsroom. At KALW, we make radio by the Bay, for the Bay, and just a few times a year, we ask for your support. We share news that tells stories of the communities that make the Bay Area such a unique place. You can contribute online at KALW.org. Click donate, and thank you.
KALW.
Does the color of this house speak to you? It seems, because you are French and you know this song.
There is a blue house in San Francisco that attracts crowds of French people. And that's because of one song.
Maxime had really captured the feeling of the house and captured how really crazy we were.
We uncover the story behind a French musical tribute to our city by the bay, en français. Then, we get an unexpected answer to a question about who is the most influential Latino in the Bay Area.
Power actually lies amongst the grassroots, amongst everyday people.
Do you know who we are talking about? I'm Suni Khalid in for Hanan Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, a story from our new series, Culture Keepers, celebrating the communities of the Bay Area.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking fucking golden.
San Francisco has many iconic songs. And as you may have heard in the past, here at KALW, we keep a compilation of the musical tributes to our city by the bay.
If you're going to San Francisco,
my baby's from San Francisco.
Open up that Golden Gate,
sitting on the dock of the bay.
Foggy night in San Francisco.
The Golden Gate from the top of the mark.
I'm always drunk in San Francisco.
But there's another song that celebrates San Francisco, and you might only know it if you're French. Reporter Astrid Fidel uncovers the myth and reality of La Maison Bleue.
I am on a walking tour of San Francisco, specifically designed for French tourists. Our guide, Florence Morel, is leading us on a quest to find a piece of French pop culture. And it's standing between Dolores Park and Castro Street. We're looking for a Victorian blue house, or as the French call it, La Maison Bleue. The group who's visiting from France is getting excited. Here's the thing. There's a few blue houses on this part of the street. One of the tourists asked Florence for clues. Is it a sky color blue? A smurf colored blue?
C'est un bleu ciel, un bleu schtroumpf, un bleu.
And then we find it. Here it is.
Elle est là, elle est là.
We're standing right in front of it. And well, we're not alone.
Un groupe énorme de Français, je suppose.
I turn around and see about 50 French people all looking up at the same house.
Pourquoi on est là?
Oui.
Pour la Maison Bleue?
The Maison Bleue looks just like a regular Victorian house. But for the French, it's a historic landmark. Since 2011, French tourists have come here because of a beloved song. Florence explains.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais.
And in English, s'il vous plaît.
Voilà, alors, does the color of this house speak to you? It seems, because you are French and you know this song and the famous singer who lived here, Maxime Le Forestier.
In the summer of 1971, Maxime joined his sister, the singer Catherine Le Forestier, on a trip. For a few months, they stayed at this house and lived with a commune of hippies, gay men, artists, activists, and leather lovers. When he came back to France, the group kept in touch, sending him letters and drawings.
He receives drawings but does not speak a word of English. He wrote them this famous song to thank them.
And he named the song San Francisco.
San Francisco, salut.
The song. You call San Francisco, we always call La Maison Bleue.
This is Ellen Elford, one of the first and last member of the commune. She lived in the Maison Bleue between 1970 and 1976.
So as you enter, there's this big, beautiful staircase going up, and between the staircase and the wall was a whole wall of hooks, and it was so cool, like so many different costumes, leather, sequins, and old hats with feathers, and anybody could take anything that was there.
It really was the days of magic.
That's Phil Polizzato, another member of the commune. He actually wrote a book about his time in the Blue House.
Hangadenga was one of the most beloved communes. Everyone wanted to be part of it.
They named the commune Hangadenga after a Marx Brothers skit.
We all moved into Big Blue before the Castro was the Castro. It was a neighborhood with a hardware store and a movie theater and a grocery store. Harvey Milk was one of our friends, and we used to hang out at his camera shop. And then I don't know what happened. Overnight, it became this gay haven.
Ellen says living in the Castro at that time shaped her attitude towards life.
There would be people wearing drag. There would be men holding hands and kissing. It just felt very liberating, even as a straight woman, just to be in a place where people could be themselves.
Some commune members were also part of drag and theater troupes, like the Coquettes, the Angels of Lights, or the Gay Men's Theater Collective.
It wasn't a monolithic group of people, and yet it was a group of people who loved each other.
It also became a laboratory for a new way of living, the communal way. At that time, there were over 300 communes in the Bay Area.
You know, sharing money and sharing resources and sharing work. It's a good way to live, really.
One project that got most of them involved was the Free Food Conspiracy, a movement started by another commune called Cauliflower.
You know, we also pooled our food stamps and bought food in bulk together with 10 other communes or so.
The Dungas became the name of those assigned to buy food from the farmers market, and the Hungas were the ones who got to deliver the food. Phil says everyone wanted to be a Hunga.
Every commune you visited got out the weed, you know, and the hash.
People were always coming and going at Hangadenga. That's how the commune connected to the rest of the world.
We had Chilean refugees that stayed with us after Allende was executed in Chile.
In the spring of 1971, Maxime and Catherine showed up at the house.
We tried to teach them the ways of Hangadenga, and Catherine caught on immediately, and she was wonderful and helped out with everything. Maxime, on the other hand, seemed to fill an overstuffed chair quite well in the living room.
Phil says that some of them were annoyed by Maxime's behavior, which was not really commune-friendly.
Maxime never spoke to anyone, never did any errands whatsoever. All he did was sit in that overstuffed chair with a little notebook. And every now and then, I'd see him write something down. And then he'd close the notebook and stare off into space.
People in the commune ended up ignoring him and letting him be.
But then he started making music.
The living room was lined with all sorts of musical instruments.
When Tom or Maxime got out their guitars, well, that was it.
And the rest of the Hunga Dungas would get excited.
Somebody would grab a tambourine, somebody would grab the maracas, somebody would grab a tin can and a spoon.
Phil says that Maxime was a fantastic musician, but very secretive. So no one knew that he was writing a song about them.
It just so happens that all that scribbling that Maxime was doing were the words to San Francisco.
C'est une maison bleue, adossée à la colline. On y vient à pied, on ne frappe pas ceux qui vivent là.
After spending their entire summer in the commune, Maxime and Catherine came back to Paris, and the Hunga Dungas went on with their lives.
Sylvia, attendez-moi.
A few months later, a package came in the mail, a vinyl.
It was Maxime's first album. We listened to the song and we cried. Maxime had really captured the feeling of the house.
Here's Ellen translating the song.
It's a blue painted house. Against the hillside, it's leaning. We come there on foot. We don't have to knock. For those who live there threw away the key. And together we meet after years on the road. We come there to sit all around a meal. Everyone is there at 5 in the evening.
Phil remembers this clearly.
All of us were creatures of the freeways. And the only time that we ever got together was for dinner.
If there were too many people to sit around a table, we'd sit in the living room on the rug and eat. It was all just very friendly. Swimming across the fog, embraced, rolling on the grass. We'll listen how Tom plays on the guitar, Phil on the quena, until darkest night.
I bet this is Phil's favorite part of the song.
Everybody made music, no matter how bad or how good it was.
Peuplé de cheveux longs, de grands liés de musique, peuplé de lumière et peuplé de fous.
Even though physically an earthquake may happen and the house fall apart, what the house represents will always remain.
San Francisco.
Ellen says that the song immortalizes a great memory in her life.
And have that song be representative of an era, and to have it be memorialized by someone in another country, it's a fabulous feeling, really.
I mean, I have been treating Maxime like he was a good for nothing. Get up and do the dishes, for crying out loud.
But now, Phil says Maxime gave the commune a gift even greater than doing the dishes.
He gave us a song that little children sing in school.
The album launched the singer's career in France. The song became a hit, and Maxime a hippie icon despite himself. But as the song grew more popular, the house was forgotten.
I think we were starting to grow up. And I think people were starting to realize that living collectively might not last forever.
Ellen says the values of society were changing too. People wanted to own things and make more money. Plus, the communes were facing an even bigger threat, the AIDS epidemic.
It was terribly scary. Everyone was dropping dead, including in Hunga Dunga.
Commune members Tom, Lizard, and Luke, also mentioned in the song, were among those who died. The remaining Hunga Dungas moved away, and the Maison Bleue became just another Victorian house. Until 2010, when a French intern at the Chronicle, Alexis Veniflès, went on a mission to find it.
des symboles français de San Francisco. Enfin, moi, honnêtement, j'en ai même pas d'autres là en tête. Moi,
Alexis doesn't speak proficient English, so he mostly did basic tasks. Still, he was on a hunt for a story he could bring back home. And so he decided to search for the lost iconic blue house.
Je savais pas du tout où aller. Donc j'ai fait forcément les commerces français du centre, les boulangeries françaises.
He knocked on the doors of any French business he could think of. French bakeries, French restaurants. He said it was like looking for a needle in a haystack. A hopeless search.
C'était un peu la recherche du désespoir quoi, c'était.
Until one day, when he managed to track down Maxime's phone number and call him. Lucky him, the singer had kept his notebooks, and so he found the address, 3841 18th Street. Alexis went there right away.
Je m'en souviens qu'elle était, elle était verte, en fait. Vert couleur d'eau.
But when he saw the house, it was not blue, it was green, kind of aquamarine. And a large family was living there at that time. Alexis published the article on the first page of the Chronicle's culture section.
C'était pas en première page, mais c'était peut-être en première page culture.
Suddenly, there was a lot of attention on the house. Maxime came back to visit, and his team organized a ceremony with a few ex-Hunga Dungas. The French consulate also got involved and added a plaque.
Le moment est venu de dévoiler la plaque qui immortalise une maison qui est très chère au cœur de tous les Français.
Now, it's a landmark that's visited by 50 French tourists on any given day, like today. Now, back in front of the Maison Bleue, with Florence the tour guide and dozens of people gathered around.
Maxime Le Forestier, his record company offered the honor to repaint it in blue. He came to give the last brush stroke. And you can see the commemorative plaque on the front of this purely Victorian house.
Today, another family lives there, and the blue house has nothing of its commune past. Some people would argue that this part of San Francisco is lost, but there are legacies from this time that still live on. The sister commune Cauliflower is still alive and operating in the mission. The free food conspiracy movement led to the creation of co-ops like Rainbow Grocery. And Greenleaf, started by a Hunga Dunga, became the leading food distributor in Northern California. For the French, the Maison Bleue canonizes an ideal of the 70s and a Californian way of life. Tourist Georges Martins, who's on the tour with us today, says when he listens to the song, he feels transported to a peaceful time.
Et j'ai toujours eu une vision de la Maison Bleue avec un ciel bleu et puis voilà, de tranquillité.
Oui, ça fait partie de l'imaginaire des Français et de l'Ouest américain.
Tour guide Florence Morel says the song reminds her of the hippie movement that arrived in France in the 70s.
Qui font partie de la personnalité de cette ville de San Francisco ces années-là.
I too grew up listening to this song. It created this myth of San Francisco in my head. But when I moved here, I couldn't quite find that San Francisco. Talking to Phil and Ellen made me realize how much of the city is rooted in what happened at that time. It may be hard to find at first, but it's still here if you know where to look.
San Francisco se lève.
In San Francisco, I'm Astrid Fidel for Cross Currents.
Où êtes-vous, Lise Deluc, Sylvia?
Astrid reported that story as part of our 2023 Audio Academy cohort. You can find more of her work online at kalw.org/crosscurrents. If you'd like to learn more, check out Phil Polizzato's book, Hunga Dunga, Confessions of an Unapologetic Hippie.
De grands liés de musique peuplée de lumière et peuplée de fous, elle sera dernière à rester debout. Si San Francisco s'effondre, si San Francisco s'effondre, San Francisco, où êtes-vous, Lise Deluc, Sylvia?
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. September 15th began what has been called Hispanic Heritage Month. Now, some Bay Area counties are calling it Latino or Latine Heritage Month. Regardless of what you call it, we are celebrating this rich heritage and culture. Fighting for representation and equity is something the Bay Area is known for. Which brings us to our next piece from Hey Area, our project where you ask the questions and we go out to find the answers. Listener Manzarat Gonzalez wanted to know, who are the most influential Latinos in the Bay Area? KALW's Porfirio Rangel has the answer.
Well, if we're up to me, I'd say Carlos Santana. His music is fun to dance to, but I felt like I needed a more sophisticated answer. So, I went back to school to meet with my former professor, Jason Ferreira. He's the chair of the Department of Race and Resistance Studies at SF State.
I'm going to say Eric Quesada.
Professor Ferreira told me Quesada was an activist for housing and immigration rights in the Mission District. He helped create the Mission Anti-Displacement Coalition in the late 1990s.
He was also the executive director of Dolores Street Community Services in the Mission District, providing housing to homeless and the real vulnerable in the community.
Quesada was diagnosed with cancer in 2004, but continued his work as an activist. In 2008, he decided to run for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for District 9. Here he is, campaigning.
I fought and I fight to preserve and expand all that's right, but at risk in our district.
Quesada lost that race. He continued to stand up for economic and social justice, but by 2011, the cancer took his life. He was just 45 years old. Professor Ferreira says he remains an influence.
One thing to take away from the example of Eric Quesada and the things that he dedicated his life to is to recognize that power actually lies amongst the grassroots.
That story first aired in 2020 from our series, Hey Area, where you ask the questions and we find the answers. Find more at kalw.org/heyarea. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.